In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Thank you for joining us for another week of iSpy Radio and another week of getting a little more intelligence on big government. This week, it's about the outright and public assault on free speech, not just here in America, but in other Western countries like Canada and the European Union. You know, when it gets right down to it, the government just doesn't like its own people. It seems like government would be just fine if people weren't around. We're an unruly bunch and we just need to shut up. Or at least that's how it seems nowadays. But actually, it's where we've always been. Government is constantly at war with people who disagree with it. And what that really means is the people in power don't like to be questioned. Here in America, we believe our government is supposed to defend our rights to free speech. Tell that to the Trump supporters in San Jose who were attacked by a mob while the government literally stood by watching and did nothing to protect free speech. The battle for free speech is certainly not new. In 399 BC, Socrates was on trial and said to his jury, "If you offered to let me off this time on the condition that I am no longer able to speak my mind, I should say to you, men of Athens, I shall obey the gods rather than you." The Magna Carta in 1215, the Petition of Rights in 1628, the lawsuit against New York publisher John Zenger in 1735, these and countless others were all steps along the way to free speech being guaranteed in our Constitution in 1789. But just 7 years after the First Amendment was ratified, the federal government passed the Sedition Act of 1798, restricting free speech. It made it a crime to write, print, utter, or publish anything critical of the federal government. Keep that in mind during today's show. Because 2 months ago, we brought you the story of the Obama administration, the same administration that used the IRS to go after the Tea Party, was exploring ways to use the FBI to prosecute people who do not believe in global warming. How dare you thwart what the government is trying to do? Spend billions on green initiatives that will enrich their friends and donors and push their agenda. At the time, a lot of people couldn't believe that would or even could happen here in the U.S. But after that show, we were contacted by one of the organizations that was under attack. We'll talk with Myron Ebel, the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, in the bottom half of the show. Their group has come under assault by a group of attorneys general. This is an attack not only on free speech, but also, in my view, outright extortion. But first up, I'd like to welcome Dr. Tim Ball, who received Canada's first PhD in climatology. He is a retired professor from the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, Canada, an author, an active global warming skeptic, and a frequent guest here on iSpy Radio. How are you, Dr. Tim?
I'm just fine, thank you, and still free.
For now.
For now, yeah, exactly.
So a lot of the time, we look to Europe and Canada for insight on where we might end up if we continue down this path towards socialism. And here in the U.S., freedom of speech used to be sacred, and it also used to be very difficult to sue someone over something they said. It's very hard to sue publishers, for example. So what is free speech like in Canada or the U.K. compared to the U.S.?
It's almost non-existent. It's a myth to suggest there's free speech. And I think that's the thing Americans have got to remember, is that there were three principles behind the Founding Fathers and the Constitution. The first was, of course, free speech. The second was the guns to defend that free speech. Mm-hmm. And the third was private ownership of property. And all three of those are under attack, because that's what the left do. They constantly chip away at those freedoms. And the reason that they attack the U.S. is because the U.S. was the first nation in history to ever put those into their constitution. And so this is the battle that's going on. And of course, it's very central to the U.S. election right now, which, by the way, the whole world is watching.
Yes.
I think that when people say, well, people are afraid of Trump, other world leaders, those are socialist leaders that are afraid of Trump. And it's actually, as Trump himself is aware, it's a compliment to him.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. So you mentioned constitutions there and free speech, obviously, being in our founding documents. Do Canada or the UK, did they have any similar guarantees, or have they always been less than free?
Always been less than free. I mean, that was the whole point of the formation of Canada, was the people that did not want to be part of the Revolutionary War against Britain wanted to remain with the monarchy, and, of course, migrated north, as we've discussed on an earlier program, mm-hmm. to set up Canada, particularly the eastern provinces, what was called Lower Canada, and the United Empire Loyalists. Now, that's changed a bit, of course, as Canada expanded westward, but still we're stuck with what's called the British North America Act, and just in that title alone, the British North America Act. I doubt that many Americans know, even a lot of Canadians don't know, that it wasn't until 1933 that every single act of the Canadian Parliament had to be approved by the British Parliament. It's just phenomenal how recent that was. And having experienced the challenges to free speech, I know it's an absolute myth in Canada.
Mm. Well, that's certainly reflective of generational beliefs. I mean, we always believe that we're in the worst time ever. This is the worst election ever. But that also really shows how we can lose free speech, is because to us, you know, all of these restrictions on free speech right now, this is kind of the new normal versus where it was 50, 60 years ago, where you had much more freedoms on speech.
Well, you've got the constant challenge, and I'll just tell you a very quick little story. I was in Ireland on exercise with the Canadian Air Force, and we were driving from Belfast to Dublin with an Irishman. And as we're going along, he said, "Oh, Paddy O'Rourke was killed here, and Sean So Seamus was hung there." And one of the Canadians said, "Boy, that was a hell of a year." And he said, "Oh, no, Sean So O'Rourke was 1742. And he didn't realize that he was speaking in the present tense. So you get countries where the history dominates, dictates, and restricts them. Mm. But then you get most other nations forget their history.
Yes.
And so trying to find a balance between remembering the Constitution, and you hear people today saying, "Oh, well, it's not relevant today, it's 18th century and so on." But the fundamental principles of the Constitution, and that's what's so remarkable about it, how short a document it is. I mean, you go and look at the Canadian human rights thing, and it's much, much longer, and doesn't give anything away. Mm. And so it's that balance between not getting mired in your history and causing it you to prevent advancement, but also remembering the lessons of it. And, of course, that's what Santayana said, that people that forget history are doomed to repeat it. And that's what's happening.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, we're going to come back with Dr. Tim Ball. And coming up, we're going to be talking about some of the societal attacks on free speech, including his own lawsuit. And welcome back. Thanks for staying with us as we talk with Dr. Tim Ball, a retired professor from the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, Canada. He's an author and an active global warming skeptic. And so on today's show, it's all about attacks on free speech, exemplified by the Obama administration's attempt to sue scientists and organizations who don't believe in global warming. So I think, though, that the Obama administration has made a huge strategic error here by going after these scientists and organizations and really overstepped their bounds, certainly constitutionally, I think. But they have really exposed who they are. What are your thoughts?
Well, there's no question about that. And it's funny because they actually themselves got conned. Because there was a group of scientists at George Mason University who got together. And, of course, their emails have now been released. You can read them on the Internet, in which they said, "Look, we've got to shut up these skeptics. We've got to silence them." And of course, the fact that they were getting government funding in large amounts of money was no small part of it, plus their own political ideologies. So they were the ones that got to Senator Whitehouse with this idea that, look, you can use the racketeering laws to shut up the skeptics, that they are actually treasonous and undermining the state. And so that was really where it started. But, of course, what you had in the White House with John Holdren, Obama's science czar or science technology advisor, was somebody who was very, very willing to listen to ways of attacking what they see as enemies to their plans. And so that's why it got picked up so quickly. The other person, who, of course, central to it, as he has been all along, was Al Gore. Mm-hmm. Because Al Gore was the one that was at the press conference where 20 of the attorney generals of the different states, led, by the way, by the attorney general of the Virgin Islands, who absolutely idolizes Al Gore, and he was the one that brought it forward. They were just so eager to follow this through that they didn't think through the implications of what they were doing. And it was so outrageous that even people that were not concerned suddenly looked at it and said, oh, no, hold on a minute. No, that's going too far.
Yeah.
But that's the problem that you get into, that you only listen to those that tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah, well, it, when I first heard about it, I was so shocked,
yeah.
As I think most thinking people are or were. This is like we're being thrown back to the 1500s, where it was basically illegal to be a Catholic in England.
Well, exactly. And of course, one of the things that we have talked a bit on the program before, worth bringing back, is that if you have a hypothesis or pushing an idea, and then gradually it's shown that the idea doesn't work, instead of saying, look, my idea doesn't work and I'm going to go back and redraft it, as science would do,
yes,
they decided to defend the increasingly indefensible. And so what happens then is it becomes so extreme that even people that don't understand say, no, hold on a minute. And that there were certain examples of that along the way. One of them was, of course, when Gore went before the Senate and said, look, the debate is over, the science is settled. Well, even reporters of the New York Times had to say, hang on a minute, science is never settled.
That's right.
And so it's this, one of the things I've grappled with, Mark, all of my career is, what is the role of an extremist in society? And I finally determined that their role is to define the limits on ideas for ordinary people. So the example I use is feminism, yeah, absolutely necessary. Environmentalism, absolutely necessary. But the majority of people are saying, well, yeah, there's some good ideas there, but how is it going to affect me and how far do we go with this?
Yeah.
They're normally afraid to say anything because they don't know enough, and so they just keep quiet. But then somebody comes along and starts burning a bra, and the rest of the women are saying, no, hang on a minute. I need that support. And so this is the role of the extremists. This is what's happening now in this whole global warming and environmental exploitation of environmentalism and global warming.
In a larger point, too, you've got all of these extremists out there. And they're,
yeah.
I mean, it's just fracturing society. We're catering more and more to the most minute of society, it seems.
Exactly. Well, the way I explain it is that the tail has always wagged the dog.
Yes.
But what you've got now is the flea on the hair on the tail that's wagging the dog. And of course, that and you see some of the extremism, by the way, is as frightening as the RICO charges, where you have individual scientists being lawsuits filed against them. And it's under the category of what are called SLAP lawsuits. Mm. Now, SLAP is an acronym for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. The lawyers tend to realize how dangerous these things are, because what you're doing is using the law to punish people when the law is supposed to be there to defend people.
That's right.
And this is part, by the way, of it actually goes back to Machiavelli, because Machiavelli said, look, if you start with the assumption that people are good, you will create a legal system that will protect the guilty. And that is exactly what's happened. And, of course, now people are taking advantage of that. And so you have these SLAP lawsuits where if you want to shut somebody up, you don't even have to pursue the lawsuit. All you have to do is file it. No, they've got then to get a lawyer and they've got to defend themselves. And most people can't afford to do that.
That's right.
And so it's very effective. And by the way, 28 of the U.S. states have passed anti-SLAP legislation, which shows how concerned they are about this misuse of the law.
Well, and it's certainly what we see a lot of times with environmental groups, where they use the law to go out and push their environmental agenda. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Everyone stay with us, because if you think the attacks by the government on free speech are bad, just wait. It's coming to social media as well. We'll talk about that after this. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about the government, which is supposed to guarantee free speech, and instead they are attacking free speech. Be sure to stay tuned for the second half of our show when we talk with Meyer and Ebel, the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, one of the organizations being sued by the Obama administration for daring not to believe in the global warming doctrine. And before we get going, we want to make sure that we mention your own lawsuit, because you end up getting sued over not believing in global warming. So why don't you talk to us about that? And what exactly did they sue you over?
Well, of course, the problem for me is that I'm a real threat, not in that I'm particularly clever, but they couldn't say I wasn't qualified, and that's one of the biases. Of course, nobody ever asked Al Gore about his qualifications, but the other problem was that I taught a science credit to art students for 25 years, so I had the ability to explain the complexities of it in a way the public could understand. And of course, that's the last thing they want, is an understanding public, and that's why education now is indoctrination, not education. And so I was a particular threat, and I got three lawsuits in a row from the same lawyer in West Vancouver. And of course, British Columbia is one of the few places in North America where you can file slap lawsuits. And the first one, my wife and I just simply said, no, we can't afford a lawyer, we can't afford to defend. So I withdrew what I wrote. But then the second lawsuit came in, and my wife and I sat down and said, no, we're not going to be bullied anymore. And we decided that we could live on our pensions, and whatever savings would go to the lawyers. And within 9 days of the second lawsuit, I got a third lawsuit, all from the same lawyer, and all on totally trivial matters. Wow. that in fact would not even have got lawsuits in most of the U.S. states. And I know that because I wrote a foreword for a book called Green Gospel with a Sheila Zelinsky, and that book got a lawsuit filed against it by Gavin Schmidt, who's the head of NASA GIS in the state of Washington. And she got a Washington lawyer, and he looked at it and said, go away, don't even bother me. And the whole thing got dropped.
Wow.
And so that was the difference. And I'm still fighting. In fact, the second lawsuit that I got is 5 years old, and absolutely nothing has happened on it since it was filed.
Wow.
So it's just designed to trouble you,
yeah, total harassment.
Money, and so on.
Yeah,
total harassment.
Yeah, and the stress that put you under. And I can imagine that just must be fierce. But unfortunately, have to move on. Recently, Facebook came under fire for censoring conservatives. But as it turns out, this is just the beginning. Facebook and other social media have signed an agreement with the EU to be policing what they deem to be offensive posts. According to an article, Section 127 of the Communications Act 2003 broadly defines illegal communication as, quote, that causes annoyance, inconvenience, or needless anxiety. Violations can carry a six-month prison term or a fine of up to $5,500. I mean, this is astounding. This is what's happening in the UK. And like we said in the first segment, this is where we're heading. It's like we're back in pre-American Revolution days.
Well, exactly. And, of course, it's ironic that it's happening in Britain because, of course, Britain is on the verge of voting to get out of Europe, because Europe is...
Yeah, but apparently you can't talk about it. It might be offensive.
Oh, no. Well, exactly. And that's how they've got you. And by the way, just to give you an idea of how extensive this is, I just finished a series of 8 one-hour Skype interviews with Romanian TV, and the guy was doing a science program, and he started to look at the climate change issue and suddenly realized that all they were getting in Romania was what the government wanted them to believe. Because, see, one of the great myths about the decline of the Soviet Empire and the release of those so-called autonomous republics was everybody said, oh, no, they're in democracy now. That's Obama's argument. No, they weren't. What happened was the communist leader simply changed their name to Democrats, and they continue in control. And of course, you control it through the media, you control it through whatever, the laws and so on, and that's what's going on still in the rest of the world. Mm. And Europe, when you look at the fact that you really have no, there is no government of Europe. There's no banking system. It's all totally run by bureaucrats out of Brussels, and that, as Mary McCarthy said, bureaucracy, the rule of no one, the modern form of despotism, and that's what you're looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have a great article out there titled The 68% in the Middle, Trump Gives Silent Majority a Voice, and we'll make sure that we link that up on iSpyRadio.com. But I know your piece is about Trump upending the traditional approach of politicians left or right, but it really seems to me that it's this fracturing of society that is coming into play. I mean, as you put it in your article, the tail always wagged the dog.
Right.
Now it's the flea on the hair on the tail that wags the dog. I mean,
yeah.
This fracturing of society into the smallest of interest groups, that seems to me to be destroying free speech. What are your thoughts?
Exactly. And of course, you see, this is the problem with these things. There are absolutes. You either have free speech or you don't. The minute that you make any compromise, it's the same with the tax system. The minute that you either have a flat tax or you have chaos, because the minute you say, okay, well, I'll give you a break,
then you open
the floodgates,
yeah.
Right? The minute you say, well, you can say that, but you can't say this. I mean, one of the things that Canada brags about is, oh, their protection against hate speech. Well, it's still a control on speech, and that's the difficulty. You either have it or you don't. They are absolutes, and this is what the debate is. And, of course, what the left want to do all the time is say, well, if I get them to give in this little bit, it's the old Aesop's fable about the camel that wants to sleep in the tent.
Yeah, get the nose under the tent. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly, and that's how it works.
Yeah, we've only got a minute here with you. Just we have become so fractured. But again, if anything, these attacks on Trump or, you know, on everybody, you know, or on the scientists, if anything, it makes the case for a non-politician in office, because those are the ones that are making things worse.
Well, but here's the thing that you've had one example in the U.S. Jesse Ventura ran for the governor of Minnesota. And he said, I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I'm for the people. And he got elected with a massive majority. And he said, I'm only going to serve one term, and I'm going to balance the budget, and I'm out of there. Now, whatever you think of Jesse Ventura, and there's a lot of parallels between him and Donald Trump, you know, that was the original idea of politics, was that you had people that said, look, I benefit from the country, and I'm going to give back. That's what Trump is saying. But what you've had built up in the meantime are professional politicians.
Yes.
Who start in school, and they go to the school board, and then they go to the municipal government, and they work their way up the political ladder, and they all go to Washington, and they all pat their backs and play their, you know, they're all playing the game. And you see that's what people are so angry at the Republicans.
Yeah,
and
that's the downward spiral. Is the only ones that can fix the problem are the ones that are there that cause the problems. Dr. Tim, unfortunately, we're up against the clock here, and thank you again for your time.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity.
All right, bye-bye. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're going to be shifting gears just a bit here, talking now to Myron Ebell. He is the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. It is a nonprofit libertarian think tank in the United States. Since 1984, CEI has sought to advance economic liberty by fighting excessive government regulation. So obviously they're on our side of the equation. They are also one of the organizations that has been targeted by the Obama administration and a group of attorneys general for daring not to believe in global warming. Myron, it's a pleasure to talk to you today.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Yeah, so let's just dive right in here. Your organization received a subpoena on April 7th, 2016, just a couple months ago, for a decade's worth of communications, emails, statements, drafts, and other documents regarding CEI's work on climate change and energy policy, including private donor information. And they demanded that CEI produce these materials from 20 years ago, from the period of 1997 to 2006. So first off, is this the first time CEI has faced a lawsuit over your heretical stand on global warming?
Yeah, yes, it is, although it's by no means the first time that the global warming alarmist community or the environmental left have tried to defund CEI by using official pressure from elected officials and authoritative bodies. So we are used to these kinds of attacks going clear back to about 2006, I guess.
Well, so talk to us a little bit about those. What were those lawsuits based on? And what did they use attorneys generals in those cases?
No, in 2006, the Royal Society, the foremost scientific association of scientists in the world in London, sent a letter to ExxonMobil saying you should stop funding CEI because they're wrong about global warming and you should not be funding people who are, engaging in wrongthink. And then two U.S. senators, one a Republican, Olympia Snowe from Maine, and Jay Rockefeller from West Virginia, sent a similar letter, and they named us by name, and they didn't name any other groups. We were target number one. That was round one, and we lost a significant amount of funding as a result of that effort.
Wow.
And now, 10 years later, we've got the New York Attorney General, and he is being assisted by several attorney generals from other states. And the subpoena we got was from the U.S. Virgin Islands.
That's right.
Attorney General, which is sort of odd. I mean, we don't normally think of the Virgin Islands as having any jurisdiction, but it is a U.S. territory. And in fact, the current Attorney General is a former EPA lawyer, so you can see why he might be interested in this kind of thing.
Well, why the Virgin Islands? That just seems odd that they would suddenly weigh in on this.
Well, the investigation for so-called—I just call it the climate inquisition of the New York Attorney General under a very powerful law that they have in New York called the Martin Act. That Attorney General, his name is Eric Schneiderman. He is kind of the leader of a group of, I think, 17 state attorneys general, and it's called AGs United for Clean Power, and they are supporting the EPA rules on to raise our energy prices and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, particularly our electric rates. And so he is the leader of this larger coalition, and he's also the initiator of this investigation, and he has roped in, I think, three other attorneys general, including Claude Walker from the Virgin Islands. So that's how he got involved. He has some expertise because, as I say, he was an Obama administration EPA lawyer.
Hmm. Well, in terms of what they're looking to get from you guys, they mentioned the period of 1997 to 2006. Why that particular period and not, like your more recent work?
Well, we were being funded during that period by ExxonMobil, and this is well known because nonprofit groups do not have to share their donors, and in fact, very few nonprofit groups do share who their donors are, and this goes back to an NAACP Supreme Court case back, I believe, in the 1950s, maybe early 60s. But ExxonMobil at that time posted all of its contributions to nonprofit groups on their website. So it was public knowledge. And we've been kind of the leader against global warming alarmism and the Kyoto Protocol and cap and trade and carbon taxes. And so we were singled out, and we have continued to be singled out. We were the only nonprofit group to get such a subpoena from the Virgin Islands Attorney General. And so a number of other groups have been named as objects of interest, something like close to 90 groups and 50 some individuals. So it's a large group, but we're sort of the first in line to be attacked specifically. We're kind of enemy number one, I guess. I think the whole purpose of it is not to involve us in legal matters, which I don't think any of this stuff has a sound legal basis. I don't think this investigation will ever lead to any serious lawsuit against a major energy company.
No, well, but I would sure hope not. I mean, this is it borders on extortion, I think. So now, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't ExxonMobil also get sued by these same groups of attorneys general?
Yeah, the main investigation out of New York is of ExxonMobil. And again, the Attorney General of New York has made it clear that Exxon is just the first. They want to go after all of the energy companies, the fossil fuel companies, oil, natural gas, and coal. And the purpose isn't to win a court settlement, and it isn't to win a court settlement against us as a nonprofit group. It's to shake down the industry and come to some kind of massive settlement along the lines of the tobacco settlement. And, you know, the tobacco industry is a very small industry compared to the oil industry, and yet their settlement, and of course the investigation had them. I mean, they had lied to Congress, they had lied in public, the executives of the tobacco companies about the health effects of tobacco. So there was a very strong case against them, and instead of putting them out of business providing restitution to people, the states that were suing the tobacco companies are getting $10 billion a year from the tobacco companies. So they are now partners in the tobacco industry. And so the tobacco is small stuff compared to oil. So if they're getting $10 billion from tobacco, you can see how...
Yeah, let's just try to do that to oil companies and all the rest. Wow, what shocking. All right, unfortunately, we are up against the clock. We're going to come back on that thought after this. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, keeping an eye on big government. We're talking today to Myron Ebell. He's the director for the Competitive Enterprise Institute, one of the organizations that came under fire by a group of attorneys general attempting to use the weight and power of the government to silence dissent over global warming. And, you know, going into the break, we were talking about ExxonMobil, and you mentioned that they're being sued. So what has been their response to this whole thing? Are they countersuing? Are they fighting this, or are they going to roll over?
Well, it's an investigation in New York under a state law called the Martin Act. And the Martin Act is very powerful, and so it's meant to regulate Wall Street. It's meant to give the New York Attorney General some control over what goes on in the financial industry in Wall Street. It's very powerful. So it's our understanding that Exxon is complying with the subpoenas for documents in that investigation. They were also subpoenaed by the Virgin Islands Attorney General, and there they have fought the subpoena, and they have filed a countersuit in Texas court. For our subpoena, it's been dropped in D.C. Superior Court here in Washington. The subpoena is still alive, and it hasn't been dropped by the Attorney General of the Virgin Islands, but he's withdrawn it from the D.C. Superior Court. So we have gone into D.C. Superior Court and asked the Attorney General be sanctioned, and that his lawyers here in Washington, D.C., who it's a private law firm that he's retained, and that attorney fees be paid to us. They have filed a counter response saying that CEI is wasting the Virgin Islands Attorney General's time, and we should be paying them their legal fees.
Wow. Isn't that just government for you? They think nothing of costing you thousands of hours of, you know, having to comply with these kinds of things. And no, but you're bothering them. Just astounding.
Well, the word that they used in their response to our motion to have this whole thing quashed was that we have been harassing them.
Oh, wow.
Harassing and wasting their time. So, you know, and they're the ones who initiated it. So,
astounding. Astounding. Talk to us a little bit about this notion that they have withdrawn the case, but the subpoena is still out there. I mean, why would they not withdraw the subpoena if the case has been withdrawn? Or why would they not have to withdraw that?
No, the case is an investigation of ExxonMobil and potentially other energy companies, fossil fuel energy companies.
I see.
And which we have gotten involved in. That investigation is ongoing. The subpoena is still active in the Virgin Islands against us, but it has been withdrawn from the D.C. Superior Court here in Washington where it was filed. So it's still alive. They could come back and try to enforce the subpoena either in D.C. court or in some other court, if they want to. And in fact, they said that when they said that they were they were yanking it out of D.C. Superior Court, that they it could come back somewhere. So we're not free and clear yet. We're just in a little bit better position than we were a few weeks ago.
Mm. Well, you know, this whole lawsuit, to me, is really an extension of a tactic that the left has been using for a long time, where you've got these so-called environmental groups that go out there, they threaten these lawsuits or boycotts and so on. If these large organizations don't get on the environmental left's bandwagon, which really means we want millions of dollars. And so Exxon has been pressured, I know, to give millions of dollars to environmental groups. Walmart also did the same. In fact, they changed their packaging requirements for all of their suppliers. In addition to donating millions of dollars to placate these protesters. It just sounds so much like extortion.
Yes, it's in the first instance, it's an attempt to silence the opposition. You scare them into silence, and therefore you're violating their rights to free speech. And then in the second place, you then try to shake them down for money. And in fact, you asked earlier, why did the Virgin Islands AG get involved? And I had forgotten to mention that he recently, and he's only been in office a few months, he recently settled a case with Hess Oil, which had a refinery in the Virgin Islands, which closed. And he proudly boasted in an interview that, well, you know, the reason I'm involved here with the Exxon investigation is because I succeeded in getting $800 million out of Hess Oil for this refinery closure. So, you know, in a small place like the Virgin Islands, which does not have a lot of people, $800 million is a huge payoff, essentially, to the government. So.
Mm. Yeah, what a great way to fund government is by suing the companies that employ the people there. That's just brilliant. So in terms of your efforts to fight this back, you've got a group called Free Speech and Science Project. They've taken over your case. What exactly do they do? Who are they? And are there others that they're defending?
It's a new thing. Law firm of Baker Hostetler, which we've retained in this suit, in this investigation and subpoena, two lawyers, one of whom is very well known, a very senior guy, David Rifkin, and then Andrew Grossman, who's kind of the main lawyer in this case, they have started a new foundation called the Free Speech and Science Project, and they hope to raise money from charitable foundations and individuals to try to defend people whose free speech rights are being threatened or violated by these kinds of attacks from, you know, it's not just environmental groups. We can handle them. I mean, if they try to silence us and shout us down, okay, they have a much bigger megaphone. They have 100 times more funding, or maybe 200 times more funding. I should just go into that for a second. The big environmental groups like Sierra Club, their budgets are all over $100 million
yes.
a year. Our budget here at CEI is $6 million a year, of which about one-third of that goes into our climate and energy work. So you can see that their megaphone is much larger, and that raises the question, well, why do they want to silence us? I think it's because they can't win the debate.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, they may have a lot more money, but you've got truth on your side, and that's always going to win out in the end, at least I hope, anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
The Free Speech and Science Project is something that is just getting started, and we'll see where it goes.
Okay, good. All right, we are up against break. Everyone stay with us. We're going to wrap things up after this. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now. We're talking today to Myron Ebel. He's the director for the Competitive Enterprise, one of the organizations that came under fire by a group of attorneys general for daring to oppose global warming alarmism. And their website is CEI.org, real easy, if you want to go visit that. And so there's a couple of things here that I want to talk about, and we've only got a few minutes here with you. Where does this all end up? Because if the AGs are able to successfully sue you on this, does that then open the door for all of these other environmental agencies to rush in and start suing you as well?
I think it's a very serious situation, even though the legal underpinnings of what this investigation is doing are very weak. I think trying to win a debate by silencing your opposition and defunding your opposition is, it may be fair when private parties try to do it, but when you try to use the powers of the state, and in this case, the attorney general of several states is involved in this, I think it's extremely serious. It goes way beyond my group, CEI, or all the groups that are fighting global warming alarmism or opposed to energy rationing policies. It should scare anybody who
yes.
Understands that free and open debate is what keeps democracies going. And when you try to silence people, you are moving towards an authoritarian regime, which, is...
It's frightening. I mean, it really should.
Yeah,
it should send a chill down everybody's spine. And it's like what Tim Baller, our previous guest, said: you either have free speech or you don't. And the minute that you start limiting that, you don't have free speech anymore. So where's the ACLU on all of this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they should be on our side. They haven't. I don't know that they've really been asked to weigh in on this issue, but I think it's one that should be of interest to them, and that they really, it's pretty obvious whose side they should be on here. But
you would sure think so, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't know that they're going to support the rights of anti-global warming alarmists to engage in debate, but I sure hope they will, and I would expect them to.
Well, I would sure hope so. The other thing that's really chilling here is that you've got these senators that are coming out in favor of what these attorney generals are doing. You mentioned Olympia Snowe and Jay Rockefeller. Also, Rhode Island Democratic Senators Sheldon Whitehouse, completely supportive of this effort to punish climate change deniers. It just gets frightening to think that these politicians are weighing in on this, which it really does come down to a matter of free speech. I mean, on the other side, have you had senators step up to defend your rights?
Oh, yes. Very strong support from senators like Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, the chairman of the Environment and Public Works Committee, and himself a noted global warming skeptic. But, Senator Whitehouse in Rhode Island was really, he got this going. Last year, I think it was in June of last year, he wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post in which he said, I think that the Department of Justice should investigate the oil industry and their allies under RICO, the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, which was meant to go after the mob, the organized crime. And he said we should apply it to our opponents in the climate debate. So he's really central to this. And one of the things that CEI does, particularly my colleague Chris Horner, is we file Freedom of Information Act requests, and we discovered, for example, that Governor Kitzhaber and his girlfriend were involved, and Tom Steyer and a bunch of people were involved
yes.
in coordinating this effort among the governors. And I suspect, as our Freedom of Information Act work goes forward, we will find similar things amongst the attorney generals.
Wow. We've only got about 30 seconds here with you. Any chance that you can sue all of them?
That has been suggested, that we need to start suing people for violating our constitutional rights, and our lawyers are looking into that. So
that would be awesome. And maybe the attorney general for the Virgin Islands can pay that $800 million that he just got from Hess off to you guys. All right. Unfortunately, we do have to get going. I want to thank you so much for your time today, and best of luck to you guys as this goes forward.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, isn't that special? Our friend Governor Kitzhaber and Sylvia Hayes coordinating among the governors to attack free speech. Isn't that interesting? I think I smell a story there. All of this is only going to get worse under a Hillary administration. With Hillary, we'll get more judges who are okay with the dissolution of our rights. And speaking of judges and free speech, I have a new article on LifeZed, that's Laura Ingraham's news site. We've been talking about free speech, and I am all for it, but sometimes you do need to be a little careful about how you say things. And Donald Trump is a good example of that, no doubt. But so are people like Paul Ryan, who immediately criticized Trump, calling him a textbook racist. So much for being on our side. Pro tip to Ryan, Mexican is not a race. My article is called Paul Ryan and the Panicky Sock Puppets. That piece is up on LifeZed, but it was also picked up by Fox News on their Fox Nation site. Links to those articles and lots more on our Facebook page and on today's show page. Like them and give them a share, because as we say every week, The best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.